Hey everybody, it's the Film Hustlers here. We just want to thank you guys for listening for this year. This year was a great year. This 2023 was a great year for the Film Hustlers.
Every year is a great year. Oh, yeah, we did Beautiful Darkness.
We did Beautiful Darkness. Right. It's still circling the film festivals. It did extremely well. That's all due to the listeners and to our sponsor, which I have to give a lot of props to.
It's all due to the pigeons.
Extrememusic.com, Russ Emanuel supporting us. In that fourth season and helping us make that movie, and it was amazing. So I just want to thank our sponsor, our partner, extrememusic.com. Thank all of you. Please remember to share the shows. You guys have been doing it. I noticed people are posting about it. People are putting it in their stories. So we're really happy to go on to 2024. We're going to make a movie this year, and hopefully our process helps you make a movie as well.
Do it.
Why'd you do it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Film Hustlers.
What's up?
You know, we're a couple of weeks into the new year. Feels pretty darn good.
Right?
I feel like we're getting some separation from COVID.
We don't talk about that.
Right? That was kind of a pain in the ass.
But you know, lockdown. We had some fun though. We had the COVID era at Robert's house. Yeah. That was
4 years ago. Dude.
We had some
It was 4 years.
We had some good guests that year.
We did.
Yeah.
We were in their patio. Everyone's all scared.
Yeah, we were drinking. No one was scared. Some people were scared. You're right. Some people were scared. I think we had Peter Marietta on with a mask.
That's right.
Yeah. We had you know who I was talking to on my way here. Is I called Antoine Fisher.
How's Antoine?
He's terrific. I pitched him your idea.
Yep.
And he is interested in getting together and talking about it.
Okay.
That could be a really, really good opportunity.
That's cool. So he's going to write it. I'll direct it. Dave, and you'll produce it.
If you're sitting at home thinking, I have this great idea, and I'm going to go to a studio, and they're going to buy it, and I'm going to produce it, it's not how it works.
No, of course not.
That is not how it works. If you do it on your own, and you happen to do a project that's like, well, Rocky wasn't on his own either. That was with UA.
Yeah.
He fought for his position. But at some point, someone said, like, you know what? Maybe he'll do a good job. You know, maybe this guy can do it, right, with this crazy idea he has, right, which we were talking about before we started the show.
But a lot of things had to fall into place that weren't necessarily, like, him, you know, them thinking the changing of the guards, right? So they approved it, and then when the new guard came in, they said, okay, who's the guy playing this Rocky? Oh, he's in Lords of Flatbush. They thought he was the lead in Lords of Flatbush. They didn't think it was the guy, Sylvester Stallone, who had like a bit part.
They didn't
part.
Do their homework.
No, and then they were already they were already impregnated. They were already invested, so the movie was rolling, and they couldn't stop, right? Yeah,
but you got to, look, I was thinking about this. It's so weird. I was thinking about so many things today, maybe because of the new year or whatever, but I was thinking about getting projects made. You know, because a lot of times, like I was at a bowling alley in Highland Park. You guys been to that bowling alley in Highland Park? It's amazing. Mm-mm. It's super old. It's got all the original workings.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. And they got couches. I mean, it was like out of a
there?
Movie. I went to, my wife was meeting her family there.
Okay.
But I don't even know why I brought up Highland Park. But I was thinking about what it takes to get a project made. And when I was at Highland Park at this bowling alley, I ran into a director that I know.
Yeah.
And I've known her for a lot of years, and she's prolific. She does shorts. She's been in all the festivals that we've been at. She's been there.
Yeah.
With her short.
Okay.
Anyway, so we were talking a little bit, and she was like, I am making a feature this year. I don't care what I have to do. I don't care what it's going to look like. I don't care what it costs.
Yeah.
She goes, I'm doing it this year. I was like, congratulations. Good luck. But I started to think, a lot of times doing projects, getting stuff done, isn't enough. You know, you've got to have like some sort of ultimate plan. But sometimes having your ultimate goal be doing a project is great. But then I thought, you know, what if she does make a feature? Then like, what's next? Like, what's after that? Right? Because we talk a lot about on the show, like, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to, okay, so we did a great short.
Yeah.
An amazing short.
Yeah.
But that's gone.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
It's going to keep going to festivals and maybe there'll be some other stuff, but whatever life it was supposed to have, it should have had, right?
Yeah.
And it did have it. And there was great actors and it was great performance and it was great directing and it was great producing. Pigeons were amazing. But then what you know, like what are you in the game for? Are you in the game for, I'm going to do my movie? Because that's, in a way, that's how you have to survive, right? You have to survive by saying, I'm going to make my movie, and that's all that matters. And then you make it, and you're unsatisfied with the result. And then you make another one, and then you're unsatisfied with the result. The unsatisfaction comes from what? From the not enough people are watching it, you're not getting enough credit. Feedback. Like, what is it?
Feedback.
Yeah.
What makes a project not successful in the eyes of the filmmaker?
Lack of marketing.
Right. Lack of marketing, lack of people watching it, right? You do movies because you wanna feel the way you feel when you watch someone else's movie.
You wanna catch a buzz. You wanna catch what everybody else is talking about.
Yeah, I think
let's get real about this. This is important.
Well, like Tarantino says, he doesn't make movies, and it goes against the machine, because he makes movies for Tarantino. He makes movies he wants to see. He says that. And a lot of filmmakers say that. Scorsese, all the great ones say that, right? But at the same time, it's kind of hard to do, because you got to make what's marketable and will sell, or you're not going to continue to make movies.
And then if you do that, then it may not sell, and it may not be marketable.
Right. No. So who dictates whether your movie is a success or not? I guess it ultimately comes down to you. I mean, some people love it, some people don't like it. Like, it really comes down to you as a filmmaker. If you feel like you did a good job with your project and it's moved you forward in your career, then I think it's a success, you know, because if I look at the stuff that I made early on versus like Beautiful Darkness, I'm progressively, slowly getting better.
You cannot deny the expert level of production in Beautiful Darkness.
No.
You can't watch that for 1 second. Like, I would stand behind it and say, there's not a filmmaker that has been born and died that couldn't watch that movie and find something to praise about it.
Yeah, the way it was executed is spot on.
Yeah.
And I think that's the goal of most filmmakers, right? To do a project that is undeniably worthy of the filmmaker moniker. Right?
Yeah.
You want to be able to say, I'm a filmmaker and that's what I do. I know story. I know how to end a movie. I know how to bring out emotions.
Yeah.
So,
and I think Beautiful Darkness captured all that.
Like, the idea that it's not successful or someone likes it or someone doesn't like it, that is beside the point. It is a great, great movie. What if you don't like, you know, thrillers, or if you don't like dramas, that's your problem. You know, it's not our problem.
Or you don't have emotion. It's not even, you have to have if you feel for those characters, you know what I mean? If you don't have any feeling, I guess, no empathy in your heart, or you're just a cold-hearted person, then I guess you won't care. But I felt for Mendoza, and I felt for Santoro.
You could not be entertained with it. You could not be entertained about it. But again, you know, I think I'm getting away from the point, is that you get into this business to do the, and you were saying it, you do the work that you feel is either funny or dramatic or a thriller or emotional, whatever, romantic comedy, whatever it is, you do it from your heart.
Yeah.
And that's how it goes on film, and that's how you do it. Like, I just saw the Scorsese film with
Flowers.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was amazing.
Really?
I mean,
what's it on?
It's
Netflix?
It's not my kind of movie.
Right.
Like, I don't know that that's the kind of movie that I would like sign up for or go pay for, but it was amazing. Like, you couldn't deny that this guy's a, you know, really clear about what he wants to do. And then the actors, you know, you have Leonardo, like, Jesus.
I mean, De Niro, you have good actors.
Yeah, I mean, they gave their A-plus performance. Here's the biggest issue, right? Like, if we have to, in the new year, like, let's get real about this. If you're a director and you can't make a hit soon, then you're in director jail.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
You can't have 30 swings at it.
No.
And then keep telling people that you're going to have a hit. That's not going to happen.
Like, you have to get two.
You have to be, you mentioned Tarantino, so let's bring him to the table. You have to be Tarantino.
Yeah.
That every time you step up to the plate, you're probably going to hit a home run.
Well, his first film, he'll say, was his film school.
It wasn't Reservoir Dogs?
No.
That was his first. Well, he
got a chance because of his first one.
Yeah.
They gave him another chance to say, okay, you know, we like you.
I think he gets two swings. He did write.
And that was a million bucks.
He did write True Romance. So that you knew he could write.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You knew But his first film, he talks about it. It never saw. Well, I think it saw the light of day, but I think it's gone now. But he said it was awful.
He wrote Natural Born Killers too, by the way. He wrote Natural Born Killers, and you know what? Oliver Stone bought it.
Yeah.
And said, "I'm going to make it." And Quentin said, "Like, oh, I want to help." And what did Oliver Stone say?
I don't think so.
Why would I need your help? He doesn't think he's a very good filmmaker at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And he had already done Reservoir Dogs. He was already writing all these great movies, you know? So it's a matter
that... Is there like a tier system? It seems like there is like a tier system, right? Because Oliver Stone at that time was like up there, Platoon. Like he had done like some... And so Tarantino was really like at the indie level, right?
Yeah,
and
but you got to give credit where credit is due, dude. You can't...
No, of course, like, but
you can't. You can't separate Oliver Stone from Tarantino.
Not now. Because then you could.
But if I... Look, and I'm going to argue this from a low position. This is not like a... This is open for criticism, but if you had done Reservoir Dogs, first of all, when I saw Reservoir, I went on a date and I took someone to see Reservoir Dogs. I don't even know why. I heard this movie's good. So we go in there. It's the most fucking violent film you've ever seen at the time. And I had never seen anything like it. I had never seen anything like Reservoir Dogs ever. I walked out of there, my mouth was on the ground, and I couldn't believe I had just seen that movie because I had never seen filmmaking like it until then.
Yeah.
So you couldn't possibly be thinking that this dude's first film is not worthy of like the amazing accolades that he should have been getting for Reservoir Dogs. I don't think you can find anyone today that'll tell you Reservoir Dogs was not a good movie.
No.
Like it clearly...
Yeah.
You know what? You know, Mr. Pink, there's quotable shit in that movie.
It's really like a play, if you think of it, because you know what I mean? There's really a hand, you have maybe five locations.
Yeah. It could be a play.
Yeah.
It could be a play.
But it was so well written, and it was like Scorsese says he always returns to movies, not because of plot, but because of character, right? The characters in that movie made that movie. The writing was great, but if you think about all those people, Mr. Pink, Mr. You know, Michael Madsen, Mr. Blonde, Steve Buscemi.
The music,
everything, even the wardrobe, just what they wore, you know what I mean? Tim Roth.
It was the opening sequence that people have copied over and over and over for years, the camera going around the table, them talking about tipping.
By the way, he copied, because he'll straight up say...
He loves Japanese movies. Yeah. He loves all that.
Everybody steals from everybody.
Yeah. Just, he stole... I think Reservoir Dogs, the concept of it was from another movie.
Probably. Yeah. Well, the guy worked in a video store, so all he did all day was watch
movies. But directors are hard. I think... I feel bad for them. I think it's a difficult job.
Yeah.
I think at some point, you have to... I look, if you're making a living and you're happy doing what you're doing, then there's no issue. But eventually there's the business of show business, right? We're in a business. I think that's what frustrates me the most about indie filmmaking, is that most indie filmmakers don't realize that it's a business. So if you were going to go start a restaurant, you wouldn't necessarily do it the same way you do an indie film, right? Because there's a lot of stuff that needs to get people into restaurants and keep them coming back.
Yeah. If you're building McDonald's, yes.
Yeah.
If you're building a burrito stand,
you still have to be pretty good, right? Something has to be working or shooting on all cylinders, because if it doesn't, then you shut it down.
Yeah.
Filmmakers don't do that. Filmmakers hang in there like something else is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like something, some other ungodly talent's going to come out of me, right? Like eventually, like unfortunately it's true. Like eventually people like me end up learning how to produce.
Yeah.
But I would never go to producer jail, because that's not how producing works.
Yeah.
I'm behind the scenes. No one's ever going to go, he's the reason that sucks.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
No.
But a director, it's a hard job.
Yeah.
Because you do have to succeed, because eventually people are going to be like, how does that work?
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to get for our investment? How does the vision set up? Where does, you know, a lot of people hire like that.
Yeah.
Oh, he did, or they did, and that was, and it went.
Well, that's the thing. 20 years ago, you can see the directors who've made it through that time.
Yeah.
Up to now. So they did one thing in 1989, and they're still at it.
Yeah. Tarantino's a great example, though, of someone who's a great writer too.
Yeah.
Maybe not a great writer, but a unique writer. Someone who writes dialogue as he would say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and then gets other actors to buy into that cadence, which then lets the audience enjoy what he's written, right? But then you got people like Oliver Stone going like, oh, I don't want you writing on this. I'm going to fix this script, you know? But I don't know. I could be embellishing on what he said because I wasn't there. But still, like, you got, like, there are things that have to happen in the life of a filmmaker, good or bad.
Yeah.
It could be bad. I mean, look at me, dude. 2 years ago, I ran into the biggest problem a producer could run into ever. It could have crushed me.
Producer jail?
I could have been in producer jail for that, yeah. But somehow, you know, people trusted that it was going to work out, especially myself, and it did. But it was a turning point where I was just like, I have to accept the severity of the situation that I got myself into as a producer.
Yeah.
I have to believe that my destiny is to be a producer and that this will sort itself out. And in the end, it's just a matter of, are you going to surrender as a filmmaker, or are you going to never, ever give up until you're in your grave? You know, I mean, at some point, I'm not getting younger. So I'm guessing at some point I'm not going to want to get out of bed for this kind of, ass kicking every day.
Yeah.
You know, I have to put on a suit of armor every day about it. You know, it's not like I'm going to walk out and everyone's like happy to see me. It's like you are pounding doors and telling stories and doing ideas and getting writers and calling, you know, I mean, it's not an easy thing. It is what I love, but it's not an easy thing. But going back to filmmaking and directing and all of that, I think you have to be realistic with what you got, because no matter what you're shooting on, whether it's 8mm, whether it's on your phone, no matter what it is, you can prove that you should be the one doing, or you should be in a different position. And it's going to show up that way. Like, you have to look back at people's careers. It didn't just so happen, right? You look back and you're like, oh, wow, that was pretty good. No one ever remembered that as really good. And that's probably a really good example and something to compare to Beautiful Darkness. They will look back at Beautiful Darkness and go like, wow, it was good then. Wow, this was great, actually. You know, but that's why you have to keep going.
Yeah, that's because it's like you're only as good as your last, right? Yeah. For the most part.
No, it's true. 100%. That's 100% true. Like, you're only as good as, you know, what you're doing. I mean, look, I make Christmas movies, but like I've told a lot of people, like, I go into a Christmas movie as if it's the best, most expensive movie I'm ever going to make in my whole life. I care about it story-wise. I care about the people making it.
You can tell.
Yeah, well, thank you. But it's true. Like, I want it. It doesn't matter if it's $15, $20, $30, $2 million. I treat them all the same. And I give them the same amount of respect because I want them to be good. Because in the end, you can't go like, oh, well, that one was just not that much. So let me apologize for that one. Like, no, like, make it all good. And stand behind every piece of work you do. I can't do that for my earlier work, but...
But you learned. You progressed.
Yeah, I did Danica, which... You recently saw?
Yeah, I love it. It was one of my favorite movies, like, back in the day.
That's amazing. Before you knew me?
Yeah, of course, because I love Marissa Tomei. Well, she's my all-time crush.
She was beautiful in that movie, too.
Excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, that was a great movie to make that wasn't really that well-received.
Right.
But it's one of those movies, I remember when I was at the screening of it, and people were in the bathroom going like, oh, my God, this is amazing. This is like a masterpiece. Like, they were, Ariel Roman directed it.
Yeah.
But it just did. It did well. It got sold as an indie. It got sold for millions of dollars right out of Las Vegas, right out of the Las Vegas festival.
Yeah.
But it really didn't get the proper distribution, and it really didn't get reviewed extremely well.
At those
times,
I think the thriller niche was wasn't quite there yet.
Overseas it was. So it sold well overseas. The problem also was that people don't like to be fooled. You know, in that movie, I tell you that this is reality, and in the end, I just pull the rug out, and I'm like, actually, none of that really happened. And then you're like, oh, fuck this movie. Yeah.
Damn.
So that's what happens.
Yeah.
But
great film.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I really liked it. I loved working with her.
Can we get Marissa?
We can get Marissa Tomei on the show?
No, in the next project.
On the next project?
Yeah. It's one of those films for me that if I watch it, like, I'll think about it. Like, I haven't watched it in years, but I always think about, like, a scene. Like, I can see a frame of the movie in my mind. It's weird.
if you have the will to make movies, make movies. If it's hurting your life to make movies, then find a way to do it differently so that you could feed your family. And then you just have to measure yourself. You know, I started really young. You know, sometimes I always felt like I was behind. I made my first movie when I was 30, right? I produced my first movie, raised my first money when I was 30. I always thought I was behind, but when I look back at my career now, I'm like, everything happened sort of at the right time for me to be where I'm at, right? But I was always like, oh man, I wish I would have done it when I was 22 instead of 30. But it was perfect, you know? It's always perfect. Yeah. You have to think about where you're at, what you're doing, how you're going to do it, and just and try to set some plans and some parameters. You know, like this year we're going to do a movie via foreign distribution. Not an easy thing to do, but it is a way to do these movies. You know, not all of those movies end up in theaters. Not all of them end up distributed through streamers. Sometimes it's just a foreign thing. It ends up, you know, on whatever network. But if you make money and you find a way to make money through that system, which a lot of people do, then you just keep doing it. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as you're making a living, you know, maybe you get a break eventually, but you know, whatever lane you get in, you don't want to stay in that lane, I guess is what I've been trying to say this whole show. You want to do your lane and then you want to move out of it. Just like Tarantino did.
Yeah.
You want to move out of it. Just like Rodriguez did. He didn't keep doing El Mariachi.
Right.
He moved into $50 million movies.
Spy Kids.
He moved into Spy Kids.
Spy Kids, yeah.
You know, he moved into other things. So, I don't know. I think the key thing for 2024 is find a bigger game to play. If you've been playing the game of making small stuff, find a bigger game to play and then see, you know, if you can make it in a different pond. Because that's the only way you're going to get someone else to say, oh, you know what, you should probably be producing, or you should probably be acting in, or you should probably be directing this bigger thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're not going to do it if you're going to stay in the lane of these small things. Yeah. So get out there, get it done, 2024. That's all I got for you.
That's good. Hey, this is a good jump to the new year.
Yeah, but I do want to, I know we've already talked about extrememusic.com at the head of the show, but I do want to mention again that extrememusic.com has the best music. I just noticed they have new drops every day.
Wow.
Like every day there's like new albums and new music and new stuff to put into your movies. I'm going to be using it. We're doing two Christmas movies this year, back to back. And I'm going to be searching through that Extreme Music library.
Yeah, you're going to be on location for like 2 months. No.
I'm going to be on location for 3 months.
Damn.
Maybe a little bit less.
How are we going to do the podcast?
We're going to do it via satellite. Well, you guys will be there with me for the first movie.
Yeah.
And then for the next month.
What is that, 2 weeks? 2.5 weeks?
No, you guys will be there for 3 weeks.
Is it 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's 3 weeks. Well, you've done three of them. We're going to be there for 3 weeks. Yeah, we'll be there for 3 weeks. Then we'll break for a week, and then we'll do another 3 weeks. You might have to call in because Davey Dave might be on the second movie. I don't know. Depends on what you're doing.
What's up, Davey Dave?
I'll be there.
Yeah, so there you go. But extrememusic.com for all your music needs, check them out. They're amazing. They keep getting better. Hard to believe, but they keep getting better. We got to have Russ back on the show to figure out what he's doing. What is he doing differently? Because it keeps getting better. I don't understand.
I know, right? You know, what does he say? What's his thing? $48 million he's raised. How much money? $58 million.
I'm well into the 60s.
Well, you can't get Russ on the show to come talk about things.
Hey, yeah, he's been on twice.
Man. Come on.
Russ is a busy man.
He has been on twice. That's right.
He's running an enterprise now.
That's true. He's running an enterprise, and the amount of liquor he has in his liquor cabinet. His liquor cabinet is a glass wall, and it's all the way to the top.
Yeah, really?
It's legit. Like, yeah. It's the best bar in LA. Yeah.
And he don't drink.
No, he drinks. Yeah, he drinks.
Did he offer you guys
anything? Yeah, we had some of the best stuff.
Yeah, didn't I take him a tequila bottle?
Yeah.
Yeah. I took him a Casa Mexico, but he had better stuff. And he was composing a Christmas movie for Lifetime that same year, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now we got to get him back. All right, Russ, you're coming back on, buddy. All right, cool. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Let's keep moving forward.
Let's keep moving forward.
Hard launch of season 5.
That's right.
Here we go, baby.